I also love that we're recording this on the day of the afternoon of game one of Celtics Heat because
we're not going to talk about it.
We joked about this though. Like 2 months ago, we were like, well, if we see each other in the ECF, just to put it out there, the universe works in weird ways. The Pats and the Dolphins play each other on Sunday. Uh-huh. And then this week we have the Marlins and the Red Sox and we have the Heat and the Celtics. It's not like they planned it that the Celtics and the Sox would be both playing in Miami the same week that the Pats and the Dolphins. Like, this was an unforeseen situation where it's the same thing. The Sox played the Blue Jays last week while the Celtics were playing the Raptors. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that this is the first time ever that the Red Sox and Marlins have played on the same day that the Heat and Celtics have, which is kind of insane. But you got to remember, like, because of this pandemic, all of the schedules were sort of jolted and thrown into a bit of a tizzy. And so now with with the bubble existing the way that it does and playoffs being pushed back there and then the MLB season being sort of condensed the way that it was, for it to all be within, you know, two, three days here of Red Sox Marlins and Patriots Dolphins and Celtics Heat, it's fun because I think like we don't like hating each other, but I definitely think like Miami sports fans and Boston sports fans really enjoy hating each other. Like, I don't know what that is, but I think there's an enjoyment when we get the opportunity to kind of clash.
Maybe it's because I just like was a casual Celtics fan for such a long time. Like if you asked me for the first 15 years of my, I'll say conscious life, because I feel like until the age of like 6 or 7, you're kind of just,
you don't really get it,
doing stuff, but you don't really know what's going on. For most of my childhood and young adult life, my favorite thing about basketball was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has not played basketball in the NBA in my lifetime. I just loved him because I saw him in Airplane. I thought he was hilarious. Then I got into watching clips of him on YouTube. And because I love his writing, because the man is amazing. He ends up for anti-Semitism and all this kind of stuff. I guess maybe I just like, I know that the Heat-Celtics rivalry is there. Like, I was always like, yay, go Celtics.
Well, because it was more casual.
And now I'm like, I would die for Kemba Walker. If he needs a knee, he can have both of mine.
For me, as a kid who was a teenager in high school during the big 3 years for the Heat, I absolutely despise the Boston Celtics. Like, I love, and the frustrating part about that is, and I've spoken with you about this before, so, because my dad grew up in Brooklyn, so I grew up a little bit of a Yankee fan as before it transitioned into, okay, I live in South Florida, so I'm following the Marlins too, right? We don't talk about it, but when I was, I loved every player on those Red Sox teams that I was supposed to hate, right? Like that 04 Red Sox team, I loved watching. I loved Poppy. I loved Manny. I loved Pedro. I did not love redacted starting pitcher, and that's worked out really well that I didn't like him because it's only aged poorly. I always liked those players. I'm frustrated because I'm in the same spot here with the Celtics for the first time. I did not like,
it's such
like,
a
I did not like
team.
Paul Pierce or I did not like Paul Pierce or Jason Terry. Kevin Garnett I love now, but it was easy to hate him when he was on the other team, right? Like that's a guy who like you love when he's on your team, you hate when he's on the other team type of deal. What's frustrating for me is like I would vote for Jaylen Brown for president of the United States. Love Kemba Walker. I love Jason Tatum. Marcus Smart, I know I would love if he was on the Heat. They're a really likable team for the most part. And so it makes it a little more difficult to be like, I hate them with all of my heart.
Right.
I'm sure as soon as they
it's kind of like hating
floor,
a basket of
I will
of puppies.
Find a way to hate them. Yeah, it is kind of like hating a basket of puppies.
You know in Parks and Rec that episode where they have the puppy and they put the puppy up to Ron Swanson's face and it's like licking him and Aziz is like, I'm just a little puppy, you know, and then and Ron's like, I'll kill it, you know, but it's like licking his mustache. I mean, I literally feel like that's what the Celtics are like.
Puppy.
It's like a basket of puppies. When I read Kemba's Players Tribune article last summer, before when he announced that he was coming to the Celtics, I read his Players Trib article and I'm like, I already would die for this man, and he hasn't even put on the uniform yet. I just, like, got the vibe that he was a special player, special person.
Yeah.
Not that the team wasn't already likable to begin with, aside from Kyrie, but
Kemba, he sends it over the top. It's not –
Right. It's like 0 to 60 in a Tesla. the minute Kemba joined this team, it was just different. And it's so easy to just love them. Meanwhile, this is Locked On Red Sox and not Locked On Celtics. Shout out to my pal John. And we are just having like a full on about the other Boston Miami.
All right, so let's do baseball.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is Locked On Red Sox on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team every day. And based on the fact that I went into a total tangent, I don't know, divergence, whatever you would call this, you've probably guessed my guest today is my dear friend, Jeremy Taché, a Florida man, but not that kind of Florida man, thankfully. He's also, in addition to being my friend, he is my co-host on our non-baseball podcast, Nickelodeon, where we rewatch iconic Nickelodeon shows from their late 90s and early 2000s. Actually, we've got some early 90s in there too. Jeremy's here with me because the Red Sox and the Marlins are finally playing each other. We talked about this like over a month ago. I said, they're playing each other for the first time in 2 years. You have to come on the podcast. We're going to talk about Sox Marlins in a shocking turn of events that is not too shocking for the Boston side, but kind of shocking for the Marlins side. The Marlins are a much better team than the Red Sox.
Yeah. So it's almost like, of all of the crazy things in sentences spoken out loud over the last 6 months, right? And we're literally like 6 months and 3 days, or 6 months and 4 days as we record this from the day Rudy Gobert got coronavirus and the whole world sort of flipped on its head, right? And in the last 6 months and 4 days, there have been a lot of crazy sentences said, but I'm not sure there is one that is crazier than the Red Sox and the Marlins are playing games in September that are meaningful to one franchise, and that franchise is the Miami Marlins. Like, that's crazy to be saying here in 2020. So it's a pretty strange year, but you know, when we were talking about it a few weeks ago, we were saying, hey, look, that could actually be kind of a big series for the Marlins, depending on what happens over the next few weeks. Well, they set themselves up to where, you know, it is, and the Red Sox of all teams can play spoiler.
Yeah, the Marlins are 24-21. They're 2.5 games out of first. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. Much like the Boston Red Sox, they do not have a great home record. I feel for you on that. I totally relate. The Red Sox, meanwhile, 17-31. They are the bottom of the bottom of the entire league. They're actually the worst team in Major League Baseball, tied with the Rangers, but they have as many wins as the Rangers. They've both won 17 games, but the Rangers have only lost 30 games. The Red Sox have lost 31. They have a 354 winning percentage, if you can even call that a winning percentage. I think at a certain point you can't call it a winning percentage.
It's a losing percentage.
Yeah. And they're 5-5 in their last 10. Their record at home is even worse than yours, though. That's because the Marlins had a huge COVID outbreak, so you weren't playing at home for a while. But the Red Sox are 8-17 at home, 13.5 games out of first place. So they have no chance. And at this point, honestly, I'll give you, it's not so much of a secret. A lot of Red Sox fans are honestly just rooting for them to tank so that they can get Kumar Rocker in next year's draft.
Who is worth it. He is a beast.
Fine. I mean, like, what are they going to do otherwise? So it's, you know, it's embarrassing to go in 2 years from winning 108 games, which is a franchise record, to currently being 17-31, which, you know, quick math here. If it's a regular season, each of these games is worth 2.7 regular games. So the Red Sox are currently 45.9 and 83.7.
That makes sense.
In a regular season, they would have won like approximately 46 games. They would have lost approximately 84 games if we're rounding up.
Yeah.
So it's not great.
Sure. Okay.
Anyway, talk to me about the Marlins.
Okay. Well, so for those of you who are uninitiated to what has been happening with the Marlins this season, a quick sort of season/overall recap. The Marlins came into this season in what was, I guess, year 3 of a rebuild. Since the Bruce Sherman, Derek Jeter ownership group took over for Jeffrey Loria That was at the end of 2017. The last couple of years, they have been really horrible since trading away, as we know, Giancarlo Stanton to the Yankees, Marcell Ozuna to the Cardinals, JT Realmuto to the Phillies, Christian Yelich to the Brewers, D. Gordon you could throw in there, traded to the Mariners. Those were the guys that were the core of that, you know, 2015, 2016, 2017 team, looked to be part of the future. The Jeter group came in and traded all of them away. JT was the second year. And while a lot of people criticized that up front because of the years and years of fire sales, for that matter, directly correlated to the Red Sox, when John Henry left the Marlins to go buy the Red Sox, that's when Loria comes in and there's another fire sale, right? There's a lot of betrayal here in South Florida, and so that we're used to with this franchise. And so a lot of fans of the team and even some media members of the team were very disappointed in those trades. Those of us who were willing to give Jeter and Bruce Sherman a chance said, all right, we'll see where this stands 3, 4, 5 years from now, right, as they sell off these players and try to get some prospects. Well, this season they're seeing some of the dividends of that. If you look specifically at the roster one for one, you know, that Yelich trade is tough, but you've seen a little bit of outfield production from Lewis Brinson and Monte Harrison, and Eason Diaz came back a couple days ago. When the bigger deals were you traded Marcell Ozuna away, well, you've got your ace in Sandy Alcantara as a result. That trade ultimately turned into Jazz Chisholm, who's called up and playing well now. You have that Yankees trade. Those turned into prospects, but at least you're off that Giancarlo Stanton money, right? You look around and the bigger trade of JT Realmuto to the Phillies. Well, you got Sixto Sanchez, who has come up and in his first five starts has been as dominant as anyone in baseball. And again, to directly tie it to the Red Sox, you've got Pedro Martinez saying he looks like a mini-me with better stuff, which is insane.
I tweeted about that today. I was going to ask you about that because can you imagine like one of the greatest pitchers of all time? And he comes and tells this young kid, you're like a mini me. Some of your stuff is better than mine.
Right. Well, and that's what's crazy. And, you know, Pedro and Sixto are both Dominican, right? So you know, Sixto just grew up idolizing Pedro, right? And that's why he's turned into a bit of what he's turned into. He has a tattoo on his neck that says 45. He's wearing number 73 right now, but that's what was given to him in spring training. Next year, he'll be wearing 45.
Oh my God.
He wants to be Pedro Martinez. And that's been his idol. And right, don't we all? Exactly. But to make real comparisons to Pedro this early on in a career is completely insane. But the stuff is there, which is really great. And so this team came into this season before anything, right? Going back in spring training in February, they felt confident. They'd added Corey Dickerson. They'd added Jesus Aguiar. They'd added even Francisco Cervelli as a backup catcher for the time being. They had added Matt Joyce, some veterans. Jonathan Villar, for that matter, was the big addition.
Yeah.
This season has been bizarre in a sense where they felt confident coming in. They felt confident about their young pitching, including Sandy Alcantara, Pablo Lopez, right? You feel good about that at the time. Caleb Smith was included in that. Now he's gone as well. They traded him at the deadline. But what happened was, as COVID, you know, delayed the season and he went into a 60-game season, their slogan became, why not us? And in a 60-game season, their premise was, anything can happen. We've got some good young pitch. Maybe we can do something. And then 3 games into the season, they were ravaged by coronavirus and ended up with 18 of their major leaguers on the injured list. Mind you, on a roster of 30, 18 players ended up with COVID. And so any logical person in a 60-game season where you're losing 60% of your roster after the first 3 games goes, all right, season's over. You know, there's no way they can hold on. But some really great spot starts from kids who should never have been in the big leagues. We're talking about Dan Castano, who's still been up. Nick Neidert, you know, who got COVID at the beginning, he's back now. We've seen starts now from kids who have turned into studs in Sixto and Trevor Rogers and Braxton Garrett. But I mean, we saw Humberto Mejia make a start who was not supposed to be up at this point. We've seen a bullpen that was pieced together of guys literally off the street, guys who had not even been in a spring training roster back in February, guys that were just literal free agents from the very beginning of this. And they pieced things together. You got to give Michael Hill, the Marlins general manager, a lot of credit for making the right moves there. Don Mattingly and Mel Stottlemyre a lot of credit for managing that bullpen properly. And they were able to sort of piecemeal their way through. So they, as crazy as it was, they went out and swept the Orioles right after coming back from COVID and their 8-day layoff with all of these random players. They got above 500. They hit a little bit of a wall and they started to get some of those pieces back, right? And have still dealt with injuries since. That's another element that not a lot of people are talking about. Harold Ramirez, who was supposed to come back from COVID and be in the middle of the order, well, he pulled a hamstring. He's out, period. Magnery Sierra, who was a huge part of what they were doing while all these guys were out, he hurt a hamstring. He's out now and has been out since he got hurt a few weeks ago. John Birdie, who replaced him playing every day, has been terrific, played all over the infield and the outfield. Now he got hurt. He's gone. But what have you had happen? You've had Jazz Chisholm, a young prospect, come up and thrive. You've had Eason Diaz come back from having opted out from COVID. He's back in the lineup. You've had Lewis Brinson, who looked like a total lost cause the last couple of years, turn into a respectable outfielder, specifically against left-handed pitching, and I could not be more happy for that guy, who is great in this community. He grew up down here in South Florida. After the Stoneman Douglas shooting, he was a kid from Coral Springs right down the road. He went and helped out a lot at Stoneman Douglas. He is a wonderful dude who I thought was just going to be cut after this year, and it was going to be a lost cause, and who knew if his baseball career would turn around, and they've turned him into at least a respectable fourth outfielder. And this team is playing with so much confidence. They made a trade at the deadline that was crucial, where they traded away Jonathan Villar and in turn of multiple moves, received Starling Marte, who's been one of the hottest hitters in baseball since they've got him. Sixto Sanchez comes up, like I mentioned. He's been lights out. And now all of a sudden, this young rotation of Alcantara, Lopez, Sixto Sanchez, Trevor Rogers, Braxton Garrett looks like they could take on anyone. And I think, I really believe that if they do make this run and get to the playoffs, like they could beat anybody in the first round in a 3-game series when you have all of those electric arms, maybe other than the Dodgers, who are just one of the greatest teams I've ever seen. But they're in position to actually, like, not only make a run here to try to get to the playoffs and feel good about that, but because of that young pitching, they kind of have a chance versus anyone. And it's exciting to have covered this team, because these are a bunch of guys who deserve to be in this position. I couldn't feel better for Don Mattingly, who at the end of last year, we weren't sure whether he'd be extended. And now he's a candidate and really should be the front runner for manager of the year. It's just, it's a special story for everybody involved, from Miguel Rojas, the not given the C on his jersey, but the captain of this team and a face of this organization, to Jorge Alfaro, who's come back from COVID and performed, to all these young pitchers and young players who've come up and got a chance to contribute, even the guys who aren't there right now, and Jesus Sanchez and Lewin Diaz. I mean, this has been a true organizational success, and you can't feel anything but great right now on this Tuesday morning if you're covering the Marlins or if you're a Marlins fan.
Yeah. Look, I'm never going to root against the Red Sox. You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for the Marlins. It's going to be interesting tonight because we have a Red Sox rookie making his major league debut, his first ever big league start. Tanner Houck is the 24th overall pick from the 2017 draft. The Red Sox are not known for developing pitchers. They're just not. No. It's not a thing that they do. You know, you've got Houck going up against Alcantara. The Marlins pitching rotation has a combined 4.78 ERA.
Not to interrupt, but what's funny about that 4.78 ERA is just in the last 2 weeks or in the last week, the Marlins lost a game 29-9 and 11-0 off of just two really horrific starts. So like if you were to take those two games out, it's no different than their run differential right now is like minus 28. Well, yeah,
22, I think
they would, or 22, right? So if they're minus 22, well, they're minus what? That was minus 31 in those two games. So really, they're a lot better than some of those stats, just because of two kind of, I don't want to say outlier games, but essentially outlier games when you get blown out that way.
It was the highest scoring game. The Braves game, the 29 yeah. runs, was the highest scoring game by a National League team in the modern era, meaning since the 1900.
Crazy. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I'm sorry to interrupt. So you can go back to, you were saying the Marlins ERA is 4.78.
That's the thing with stats, though. I mean, is, you know, if you only focus on one stat, you're not getting the whole story. And it's an interesting thing right. because since I've been getting into basketball, I realize, you know, most basketball coverage is not going around being like, he has this percentage for field goals and he has this percentage right. for free throws and blah, blah, blah. You just have people making educated statements based on kind of the eye test and the final score or the points per mm-hmm. game. But in baseball, you have so many different stats that break down a player. And it kind of gets mm-hmm. to the point. I mean, it's the whole conversation about analytics. Like, you're driving yourself crazy here, and you're also not getting, like, yeah. the more you dissect something, the less of the bigger picture you can see. And so, you know, for the Red Sox, like, the Red Sox are the worst team in baseball. And at the same right. time, their offense currently ranks top 10 in batting average and OPS.
Crazy.
So, crazy. It's like, you know, because they still have Devers, Bogarts, Vasquez, mm-hmm. JD, this new kid, Christian Arroyo, not to be confused with former Red Sox pitcher Bronson Arroyo. Like, he homered in back-to-back games on Saturday and Sunday. You'll appreciate right. this as a Jewish person. They had two batters named Christian, both homer on Sunday. I thought that was hilarious.
Hey! Most people care, I think that's hilarious. No. I do think that's funny. I like that.
Yeah. See, and this is why we're friends, because most people would just be like, shut up. Like, you know, enough with the stupid dad jokes. But, you know, that's kind of the point is like, you have to kind of balance looking at the big picture of a team and even a player and looking at the individual stats of like, okay, mm-hmm. so the Marlins have a 4.78 ERA. They had a couple of really, really, really bad games that totally messed with the curve.
Yep.
You take those games out, their ERA is probably like 3.5.
Yeah, and the thing for Sandy here tonight that's going to be interesting is you're not wrong, right? The Red Sox, and this is something that I think folks going into this series, there's a lot of confidence going around with the Marlins right now, which is only setting up for like a Red Sox sweep, right? Like, that's like right now, it's this very strange time where all of Red Sox fandom seems to have given up on this season, and South Florida sports fans who were not right. Well, but South Florida sports fans who were not on the bandwagon, and it's taken this past series against the Phillies where the Marlins went 5-2 to kind of get them to pay attention almost worries you, right? If you're like a superstitious person, which I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. Mm. And it does worry you that we can't forget that the Red Sox do have a very good lineup. Like, as bad as their team has been and as bad as their pitching has been, the Marlins have also not always taken advantage this season when they've faced mediocre pitching. They've very much, a lot of these games have played to the talent level of the teams that they face. So, you know, they beat, remember that when they lost to the Braves 29-9, they actually won that series 2-1. Like, they, so, it's a very strange team that way, and you do worry. You know, Sandy's been good, and he was better in his start than he's been previously. But remember, he missed 6 weeks. He's only made 3 starts this season, or 4 starts this season. So he's just still kind of rounding into form, and you'll see Alcantara tonight. You'll see Rodgers go soon after that. And you know, the Marlins bullpen has been better, and I think you might see Urania on Thursday, who has not exactly been great. He's only made a couple starts since coming back from COVID. So there's still question marks there, and it does leave an opening for the Red Sox to play a bit of spoiler this weekend and maybe take – or this week – and maybe take 2 out of 3 from the Marlins. So you hope that with all of the momentum, with the tweets of are you paying attention yet coming from the Marlins social media, right? You hope that the team is ready for this moment with, you know, exactly 1/4 of their season left to be played in prime position to make a run toward the playoffs. If they're going to do it, they need to take at least 2 of 3 from Boston here, and they play 5 with the Nationals over the weekend. You need at least 2 or 3 of those games as well, because then you get Atlanta and the Yankees to close out the year. The Yankees will be pushing for a playoff spot. Atlanta will be trying to hold off the Marlins from taking the division from them. So if the Marlins are going to make this run that we're all hoping for, even maybe some of you guys listening on this podcast who are Red Sox fans may look at the Marlins as a fun, benign story. If the Marlins are going to make that run, they got to kind of beat up on the Red Sox the next couple of days.
There are so many makes and models of cars on the market nowadays that it's impossible for your traditional chain storefront to stock all the parts that you need. And it can be intimidating to go into one of these stores and ask questions when you don't really know what you're looking for. Instead, use your computer or your smartphone, go to rockauto.com and see all the parts that your car could possibly need for the lowest possible prices. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and the do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are always reliably low, and they don't change their prices based on what the market bears like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpeting. So if you're a classic or daily driver, you'll have everything you need in a few easy clicks, and it's delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. I think it's a funny time to be a Sox fan and a Marlins fan because, you know, Sox fans love their team, but most of us, I think, at this point are looking ahead. We're not focusing on the season. Yeah. And the only thing that at this point that you can get out of this season is that first round draft pick in 2021.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to root for your team to lose, but at the same time, your team losing is actually the best possible outcome because it's already a lost season. And, you know, wanting a team like the Marlins to kind of have that Cinderella story, that underdog vibe, which being a Red Sox fan pre-2004, like I appreciate kind of that scrappy, you know, nobody expected this from them, especially with the COVID thing. Like, you know, you want a team like the Marlins to shock the world because it's kind of boring when it's the same teams in the postseason every year. Like, I get it. The Yankees make the postseason every year. Cool. They're annoying and they have 27 championships. Like, I don't want to see them in the postseason. This is why I rooted so hard for the Nationals last fall, because it was like, this is what baseball should be about. Baseball should be about that team coming out of nowhere, defying the odds, shocking the world, making everyone's jaws drop, making you scream. Like, that's why you get into baseball. That's why you become a baseball fan. You don't become a baseball fan to watch the Dodgers flame out in the postseason for the seventh year in a row. And I'm not saying that because I want that to happen to them. I'm just saying it is exciting when a team like the Marlins has a chance to get in there with the big boys, because that's what life should be about too. It should be about the underdog getting their moment in the sun, you know? And so I can't not root for the Red Sox, but I also can't root. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I hope Alcantara gets lit up tonight, because like, what does that do for the Red Sox? It doesn't do anything. In the National League, like, you know, you're my team.
You got to remember and this is a fun thing for me, right? Cause I feel very blessed that when I graduated college, I got a job here in South Florida where I grew up. So I'm getting to be a media member who covers these teams, but I also grew up rooting for these teams, right? I am a Heat fan. I am a Marlins fan. I'm not ever going to shy away from that fandom, regardless of the whole no cheering in the press box concept, right? I am a fan of these teams. It's who I grew up watching. And so I have sort of the blessing of perspective as well, right? If I was covering the Red Sox, as much as I know about baseball, I don't know what it was like to be a Red Sox fan for all the years where they didn't win World Series, or what it's been like in the last 15 years since they have won, right? So as a Marlins media member and Marlins fan, I can tell you the last 17 years since they won that World Series in 2003 have not been very fun for Marlins fans. And you mentioned the whole underdog mentality and getting people into a playoff where they have a chance. I always sort of bring things back here, but being around this Marlins team that has sort of shocked the world against all odds, how are they winning like this so consistently? It's reminding me, and I say I graduated from college and then I came down here and worked in South Florida. Where did I go to college? I went to UCF. And this feeling around this team that people are starting to rally around, and this sort of shocking momentum of a great year, reminds me a bit of that undefeated UCF college football team back from 2017 that ultimately claimed a national championship. But it was the same sort of like, how is this happening despite all the odds being stacked against them? And so it's this very cool moment to sort of be reliving that feeling. And it's not the same thing. It's not the same type of comparison. Obviously, there's professional sports and college sports are very different. That's an undefeated season versus a team that's just a few games over 500 here. But in that same vein of, you know, the Marlins had all of their issues with COVID, and really the national media very much turned against them when that happened, was blowing up Miguel Rojas's decision via text message to play. That's not where decisions were made, right? And everybody expected, like, oh, of course it's the Marlins where this happens. Of course it's Miami. And for them to now, in spite of all of that, right, to turn around and be thriving still at this point is something that feels pretty special. And it's one of those types of teams that they're going to play with a chip on their shoulder the rest of the way. And that's always fun. And, you know, in what has been a weird 60-game season that we're not going to remember any individual player performances from this season. We're just not. Like, regardless of how incredible Shane Bieber has been this season, right? Nobody's going to remember specifically what he did. What we're going to remember is what team shocked the world or what team won the World Series. And so if the Marlins can make a little bit of a run, that might be the one thing we remember from this weird 60-game 2020 season. And that's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, like, I was 11 when the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004. Mm-hmm. I obviously don't have the decades of pain, but I do come from a third generation Boston family. I have a great uncle who's 102 years old. He was born in June 1918. He was an infant when they won in 1918. And then he waited 86 years to
That's
see
incredible.
Them win in 2004.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. And he said to me, he's like, I didn't think I would live to actually like remember a World Series. And now I've seen four. And so for someone like him, someone like my dad, who saw Carl Yastrzemski have a multi-homer World Series game when he was a kid with his dad, who passed away when my dad was 15 years old, like you carry that in your family, and, and you feel, you understand, like, my dad came on this podcast for Father's Day and he said, you know, you were just used to them losing. You expected them to lose. You hoped that they wouldn't. But the norm was that they would go to a game seven in a World Series and they would lose that game with like one out to go. They would lose with two outs and two strikes. And, and that was just what it was. And so I mean, I'm guilty of this too in the last couple of years, but Red Sox fans are spoiled. And
it has become,
they went from the Yankees' downtrodden little brothers to the king of the division. I mean, they've won four championships in 15 years. The Yankees haven't won since 2009. Like, the roles are very reversed. And I have to say, myself included, like, I don't always like how Red Sox fans act, because you look at a team like the Indians, for example, and they haven't won since 1948. Right. And, you know,
yeah, it like
I
took a long
kind of,
time to get there.
Yeah. I kind of, and you know, with the Phillies, for example, I mean, I know, They're your division rivals, but the Phillies are the oldest continuous franchise in Major League Baseball. They were from the 1880s, and it took them 97 years to win their first World Series. I mean, yes,
no,
but I'm just saying, like, the perspective there. Well, I mean,
right.
No,
well,
annoying,
and that's the whole thing.
The perspective
perspective.
Is just, you know, like, I kind of shifted last year when the Red Sox officially lost. I was at the game that they lost that officially eliminated them from wild card contention, which was not a shock.
Right.
But I was there and I was like, okay. And then I was like, wait, I've literally been alive for four World Series. I've been to World Series games. I've been to postseason games. I lived through the David Ortiz era. Like, what do I possibly have to complain about? And it just shifted my focus, you know?
Well, to be a Boston sports fan in our lifetime is literally
right.
the best.
Yeah, I mean, there's like no,
you
cannot
can
complain.
Yeah, it's incredible. Between the Bruins and the Bruins and the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Patriots, obviously, like, it's been dominance for our entire lifetimes. And as a South Florida sports fan, We had the Heat. Okay. We had the Heat. We had the big three. But right now, as weird as this is about as optimistic as I've ever been about the state of South Florida sports as a whole, because you have the Marlins looking, you know, to reach the playoffs in this weird season. And whether that means they're a playoff competitive team next year, who knows? But right now you feel good about some of the young guys you're seeing. You've got the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. While the Dolphins looked bad against New England on Sunday, obviously, they're still, you know, Tua Tagovailoa waiting in the wings. You feel great about all of that. And, you know, the Panthers just grabbed a new GM. So they're never any good, but who cares? So it's this kind of fun existence. And, you know, for me, I'm just grateful to get to come on here and talk about a Marlins team that is competitive, because to be perfectly frank, you know, in 2009, they almost made a wild card run. And in 2012, they had acquired all these new people going into a stadium. And, you know, I remember when Jose Fernandez got called up and there was excitement around the team because of just what he was every 5 days. But there has not been a level of excitement around the Marlins and their franchise like this since they went on that wild card run and won the World Series in 2003. And so as a kid who was 8 years old then, in my third grade teacher's classroom in October, getting to celebrate, you know, the Marlins World Series victory. And the reason I say that is because my third grade teacher was actually Gary Carter's daughter. So she was a diehard baseball fan who loved celebrating all things Marlins with me and just loved that I loved baseball. To do that the last time the Marlins were any good, and to be here now covering a team that has a shot to make another strange run, has been quite the joy. So, and I'm thankful that, you know, you've been willing to have me on and, you know, be a part of this, obviously.
Well, I mean, of course, you know, this is what sports are supposed to be about. They're supposed to be about the valiant effort of the team you don't expect, the player you don't expect. I loved seeing what the Nationals did last fall. Mm-hmm. I'm going to root so hard for the Marlins to do something similar. And yeah, maybe they don't have what it takes to go all the way, but I think that people forget.
But who cares? It's fun.
First of all, it's fun. And this Marlins team is fun. Yeah. And more teams should just be having fun. Like, one of the biggest complaints I've had about the Red Sox this season is like, okay, your season's a throwaway. Have some freaking fun with it. Like, do something weird. Play loud music. Dance around. Like, have fun. Yeah. We already know you're going to lose the game, but at least have fun doing it and like give the fans something to do at home instead of just sitting there being like, okay, so he's given up 7 home runs in like an eighth of an inning. You know, have fun with it. Mm-hmm. I think that we also forget that it's in terms of perspective, just the perspective of it's so hard to even reach the postseason and to play in a postseason series, and you're playing against the best of the best. It's the cream rising to the top and then you're fighting it out. Mm-hmm. It's just impressive. And so I feel like in this season of, you know, I got one eye on the Red Sox and I got one eye on the West Wing on the TV. Mm-hmm. I'm just appreciating the teams that are kind of, they've got that spark, and the Marlins are one of those teams. And so we've got Sox Marlins for 3 games today, tomorrow, and Thursday. And then Jeremy, you're going to come back with our friend Mike, and we're going to do a recap on Friday, and it's going to be great. And this episode's definitely like an hour long, so I'm going to have to edit it down, but that's what always happens to us. Jeremy, tell people. Exactly. Tell people where they can find you on social. Plug Swings, plug Nickelodeon. Everything.
You got it. All right. So you can follow me at Jeremy Tache. That's T-A-C-H-E on all platforms, cross platform, Jeremy Tache. you can also follow Swings and Mishes at Swings and Mishes. If you're wondering why it sounds like I'm speaking with a lisp as opposed to saying Mrs., Craig Mish is our host of Swings and Mishes. I am the co-host, so that's where you get that pun of Mish from. So if you guys are looking for, hey, if you're a Red Sox fan, this is my pitch to you. If you're a Red Sox fan and you're looking for a team to root for down the stretch, and you're looking for a team to follow and truly follow, come listen to our podcast. We have, you know, 20-30 minute episodes once a week. Craig is, I'll give him credit. He is the most informed person on the Marlins that exists. I like to think I'm informed as well, and we have a good time on there. You can follow us at Swings and Mishes on both Twitter and Instagram. If you just like to see lineups, players of the games, things like that, that's all on there. And if you're looking for, you know, breakdowns of everything, you can listen to us at Swings and Mishes. And also, as Gab mentioned, Nickelodeon, that is our podcast together, which is a Nickelodeon rewatch podcast. I'm having a blast doing that with Gab. We have so much fun. Gab, I just wanted to say thank you again for having me on here. And to anybody listening, I hope I did not ramble too much about these Marlins, but I think there's something worth being excited about. And yeah, I look forward to Miami teams dominating Boston teams this entire week.
I cannot say the same, but
that is not the way to get people to listen to my stuff, but
no, it's not.
I gotta be true.
But Jeremy's great, and he's true to himself, and he's a wonderful friend, an amazing co-host, and just the best person ever. As always, guys, you can follow Locked On Red Sox at @LO_RedSox. You can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1. Subscribe and download so you never miss an episode. We've got great stuff coming all week long. And as always, even when they're playing my favorite National League team, the Miami Marlins, go Red Sox.